Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast is being brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit coderedroofers.com.
Well, I can tell you one thing, all right? I have a work ethic that is ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. And I don't want to change it because it's really served me very well. And I set a role model for my children who also have this kind of work ethic, which means that unless we are literally, you know, have one foot in the operating room, we go to work and we work. I woke up this morning and, yeah, I went to bed. I was feeling okay. You know, I was tired. Been feeling a little bit tired since I came back from California, and then the time changed, so I lost the 3 hours, and then I lost another hour, and so I've been, you know, struggling to readjust. I'm not a spring chicken anymore. But I went to bed, I felt okay. I went to bed early because I have a really busy day today. I go to bed early. I wake up this morning, slept all night, no problem. You know, woke up this morning, and my face felt like the Malaleuca, whatever that thing is, was blooming inside of my sinus cavity. Or the mangoes. Whatever it is that's blooming right now, have mercy. That stuff just gets all up in my sinuses. And I don't feel sick, but my voice is shot, my nose is shot, and anybody in their right mind, which I'm not, would say, I'm just, you know, taking the day off. I'm staying here. I'm going to stay in bed or drink like warm soup and hot tea or all the other nonsense that people, you know, like to do when they're sick. I'm thinking about that, right? And then I go, I can't do that. I had to go to the jails this morning. I have a job. I have to prepare for my show. I have to do my show, even though my voice is a little scrappily. Scrappily? Is that even a word? Well, whatever. It's a little strained, but it's not bad. So I got to do my show. And then I have to go to an orientation at the Broward Sheriff's Office at 2:00 this afternoon, which I have to do every year. And as luck would have it, it was scheduled for today. So I have to go down there. And then at 4:00, I have an appointment. And then at 7:00, I have to go speak in Coral Springs. And then if I have any energy left in my body, I actually had tickets for a concert tonight, which I will not be able to get to in time, but I'm just kind of hoping I could hear the last couple of songs. It's right in my community, but nobody in their right mind would conduct themselves the way I'm going to conduct myself today. I remind myself of Donald Trump. Really, you know, maybe that's why he's such a hero to me, is because this is a guy who actually got COVID when we still didn't know, like, could COVID kill an old guy? You know, we're not really sure. And he, like, rallied, was back at work, working in the hospital, then came home, working. I have that same kind of drive. And I think that's probably one of the reasons I admire him so much. I'm also really not very sensitive about people's feelings. Gee, that sounds terrible when I say it. But that's something else I share in common with Donald Trump. If I'm, you know, if I'm on the beam, as they say, if I'm on track and you try to get in my way, I will run you over. I mean, you know, Donald Trump will run over Ron DeSantis. He'll run over Vivek Ramaswamy. He'll run over everybody. Joe Biden, it doesn't matter. Hillary Clinton, he'll run over everybody because he's on a beam, he's on a track, and he wants to get to a particular goal. And that goal is to try and pull America's behind out of the fire that we find ourselves in. You know, my thought of the day had to do with digital currency today. You'll get to hear it at some point tonight at, I think it's at 5:55, and then tomorrow morning on Jen and Bill's show. But it's about, you know, the things that preoccupy me all the time. And when it comes to this digital currency stuff, my husband has become so obsessed with this subject that I've had to do some serious research, because I don't want to go flying off the handle about it, you know, and get paranoid, even though I think we have a good reason to be. It's not paranoia if they really are trying to get you. You know, I've learned that. And I think in this case, they really are trying to get us. So I had to put that together. I got a lot going on, even in my personal life. All good, but just super busy and super unwilling to relax. Because when you're on the, and I never thought of it until this morning. Donald Trump and I are very, very, very similar. I have a little more of a filter because I think probably because I'm a woman and women are nurturers and we don't really like hurting feelings. Like, I'll do it, but it bothers me. It doesn't bother him. You know, so that's the only real difference I see. The other thing is when we are committed to something, we really, really, really are committed to it. And we can change our mind. I mean, Donald Trump changed his mind on abortion. And I pretty much changed my mind on the battle in the Ukraine with Russia. Not because of Tucker Carlson, because I really don't spend that much time watching that show anymore, any other show. I've just decided that I'm smart enough to read the information that I need. I don't really need somebody to spoon feed it to me anymore. I'm not that busy that I can't do the research. Like, you guys are busy. You have jobs and lives and families and all the rest of it. So you kind of depend on people like me to give you the most important aspects. You watch Tucker, you watch whoever, Sean Hannity. I don't know who you watch. Maybe you watch MSLSD. I don't know. But you try to get the information that you need, and that is one of the ways you do it. Well, I don't need to do it that way anymore, and I've really been much happier since I stopped listening to everybody else's opinion, because really their opinions often don't line up with mine at all. But I was very adamant that we needed to stop Putin when he started this invasion of Ukraine over a year ago. And I was like, do what you got to do, send the right tools, weapons, whatever you got to do, end this. Pressure the European Union, do what you got to do. But we didn't do that. We pussyfooted around and we made it really like just a very fragile situation for the people of Ukraine. I mean, they're dying in droves. It's a nightmare what's going on there. And we don't get that from the media, or we don't get that from Lindsey Graham or any of those people. All we get is rah, 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 we got to stop Putin. Well, you know, I was saying that a year ago, and everybody else was saying, well, we don't want boots on the ground, and we don't want this, and we don't want that. Okay, well, now we have this protracted war, which has cost just untold amounts of lives on both sides. Look, I'm not sympathetic to Vladimir Putin, but the Russian people don't necessarily deserve what's going on in their world right now. But we blew it, and we can never admit when we blew it. We blew this. We can no longer pull Ukraine's behind out of this fire. They're losing the war. They're going to lose the war. And no matter how much more money we throw at it, it's kind of like how we throw money at education and we throw money at healthcare. We throw money at whatever, education being the worst. It's like having a disposer for money. By the way, Donald Trump says he's going to do away with the National Education Council. Good. You know, we never needed that anyway. Let the states handle education. Let the states handle voting. Let the states handle as much as they possibly can handle, and we'll all be a lot better off. But I just watch now these billions of dollars being sent to a war that, look, I'm not a military expert, and neither is Lindsey Graham, okay? I'm not a military expert. And neither is, Sean Hannity or Tucker Carlson, for that matter. None of us are military experts, so I don't pretend to be. But I am a person that has common sense. And common sense tells me, oh my goodness, they are not winning the war, no matter how much money we give them. And all I get to see are, you know, Zelensky being like a superstar and Ukrainian oligarchs flying around on private jets and, buying up islands and Zelensky's wife wearing, Balenciaga fashion. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, how is this helping the Ukrainian people? Well, the answer is it's not. We blew it and we seem incapable of admitting that we blew it. At least I'll say this for Donald Trump. He pretty much blew COVID in the beginning. Overreacted, and that was a problem because rushing the vaccines and shutting down things and all that, allowing Fauci to run ramshod over our entire system, those were mistakes. But Donald Trump said those were mistakes, okay? We won't do that again. And much to his credit, the one thing that our governor, Ron DeSantis, has going for him is he figured that out quick. He looked at the federal government. I saw the interview. He looked at the government and he said, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. I'm just going to take advice from people who I actually think know what they're talking about. His own Surgeon General, Jay Bhattacharya, the doctor from Stanford. He was being selective about what expert opinions he believed and not running with the crowd, even though they were trying to make his life pretty miserable, including Donald Trump tried to make his life pretty miserable and implying that, he was taking risks with the lives of Floridians. I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm really, really, really glad that I was living in Florida during COVID, because my friends who lived in other parts of the country suffered much more than we did. Their kids suffered much more than ours did. And that, my friends, is one of the reasons that, I'd like to see Ron DeSantis stay the governor. Because I think in the final analysis, there's a lot of power in the hands of the state. And if I were to have my way, there'd be even more power in the hands of each individual state instead of a federal government. So, look, I'm watching the insanity of the Democrat side, right? Like, who's going to run? Is it going to be Joe Biden? Has to be Joe Biden. But Kamala Harris doesn't get Elizabeth Warren's nod of approval. Bernie Sanders, should I still run? Bernie, you shouldn't even still be like in the Senate, never mind run for presidency. But anyway, and now we have Marianne Williamson, whose staffers have all come out. Now, mind you, Marianne Williamson is the doyenne of meditation and loving one another and all such beautiful things. I used to listen to Marianne Williamson all the time for meditation tapes. She's a spiritual advisor, a best-selling author. And apparently the way she treats her workers is pretty much at odds with that image of her. 12 people who work for her during her 2020 presidential campaign paint a picture of a boss, who can be verbally and emotionally abusive. She could be cruel and demeaning to her staff, and her behavior went far beyond the typical stress of a grueling presidential cycle. She would be foaming, spitting with uncontrollable rage. It was traumatic, people said. Now, and they're being sued. Everyone is being sued because they had, broken non-disclosure agreements. She would throw her phone at staffers. Now, mind you, we heard these stories about Donald Trump, but never from his staffers, right? It was always like, Robert Woodward says or Carl Bernstein says, but it was never like staffers who said, he's really out of control, because he really wasn't out of control. He's very controlled. So these outbursts where they used to have hotel staff knocking on her door to check and see if everything was so all right. She got so angry about the logistics of a campaign trip to South Carolina that she thought was poorly planned that she pounded a car door until her hand started to swell. She had to go to an urgent care facility. Wow. She would scream at people until they cried. Yeah, well, it's a little more exciting than Joe Biden, but it's probably not good for the country. Anyway, let me take a break. Don't forget to download the 850 app. And if you don't do that, you've got to visit the website, because we've got a whole bunch of really cool contests that you could be part of. We have a generic contest that's always running. There's two ways for you to win, either with the 850 app or by going to the website. And then we have a new contest with Tilson Tender Shack, a $50 DoorDash gift card so you can get saucy with freaking delicious fried chicken tenders from Tender Shack. I don't know what that is, but it sounds delicious and my mouth is watering. So go to the website or download the app and stay right where you are. I'll be right back.
All these crazy alien stories can't be true, can they? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
So, of course, Marianne Williamson is denying that any of this stuff happened. And, okay, you know, I don't understand, how big does your ego have to be to launch a second presidential bid when you barely showed up in the first? I just don't know. I mean, people are, you know, I'd like to think that she just really wants to help America and that she thinks she brings something different to the table. But, you know, that I don't like politicians, but I also don't like people who have nothing to do, nothing, zero, nada to do with politics, never paid attention to it. We're out on a spiritual quest, which is fine. It's great to be on a spiritual quest, but then don't pretend that you know enough to be launched into the most powerful office in the whole world. It's not just America's most powerful office, it's the most powerful office in the whole world. And, you know, I think that, you know, just because you can make meditation tapes doesn't qualify you for such a lofty ambition. But that's just me. I almost feel compelled to share with you some of the things that I talked about in my thought of the day, because not everybody gets to hear it. Although if you had the app, you could listen to it every day. But I don't know that you have the app. So I think I might, you know, share with you, you know, I culled it from the works of a couple of different people, because I don't know about the rest of you, but I got a lot of people in my life who are really worried about this whole digital currency thing. And I get it. You know, I am worried. I am worried. I'm so busy, though, trying to whack the next mole that pops up in the political scene that I maybe not didn't pay enough attention to it as others who, for whatever reason, seem much more inclined to study this with a lot of passion. But I did, this morning I got up very early, and after I did, you know, my usual morning routine, which includes prayer, meditation, all that other stuff, and I was stable, stuffy but stable, I started to watch this video by Louis Navalier. Now, Louis Navalier was a financial advisor that, when I did financial broadcasting for a brief period of time on 850, it was 25 years ago, I don't know, it was a long time ago, I would interview all these brilliant financial analysts, stockbrokers, all kinds of, you know, incredibly brilliant minds. And Louis Navalier was one of our favorite guests because he was a little contrary to everybody else. And so I watched a video this morning where he literally was talking about this, you know, choke point program that Barack Obama had put into effect to control currency, and then Donald Trump had undone. And now Joe Biden, it's like choke point 2.0, only they just call it something different and pretend it's not really happening. So, you know, I was reading Roger Simon. I was reading a couple of other people, Louis Navalier, Charles Gasparino from Fox Business. I'm reading all these people and I'm thinking to myself, you'd have to be really naive. And I think in my, you know, thought of the day, I actually say you'd have to be stupid. And I apologize if that hurts anyone's feelings, but you'd have to be stupid to not be somewhat concerned. I mean, I walk around with the device in my hand or in my pocket or in my purse all day long, which tracks me. It tracks what I buy. It tracks where I go. It tracks who I talk to. It tracks what websites I visit. Okay? So I've known for a long time, as have you, that I'm being spied on. I'm being spied on by private enterprises like Google and Macy's or whoever else, you know, has a cookie on me. Is that the right term? Well, sounded good. And I'm also being tracked by the government. And as if it wasn't bad enough that my phone is a tracking device, now I realize that, you know, they are serious about this digital currency. And what it means is that money, as you and I know it, is going to be over. Done. There'll be no cash. There's already not a lot of cash. I was at Universal Studios in California just last week, or the week before, and there were signs everywhere, no cash accepted. No cash. I mean, you could not buy a hot dog with cash. When you get on an airplane, you can't buy a beverage or earphones or anything else with cash. You have to use a card. Now, okay, I got used to that. They did this, like, you know, in slow motion almost. So I got used to having a debit card. So the debit card means that my money is in the bank in a checking account, and I can use that card, and the money will be taken out of the checking account and placed in the vendor or the merchant's account. And I went for that. But now, oh my goodness, now we're talking about the imposition of digital currency. And what it tells me is, just like Rahm Emanuel said years ago, you never want a serious crisis to go to waste. These bank failures that you're seeing, the three banks that have failed in the last 1 week, let's say, that's the emergency they were looking for. It's an opportunity to do things that they didn't think they could get away with doing. Just like COVID was an opportunity to turn our entire election system upside down, and they took advantage of it. What happens if they have digital currency now, which tracks everything that I buy? It tracks every donation that I make to whatever cause I make it to. It tracks my tithing to a church. It might track my contributions to a political candidate or a political party. You know for sure they're going to track that, right? And so now what happens if I don't line up with what the prevailing powers in Washington want? You know, do they turn the tap off and my funds are no longer available to me? Well, guess what? That's exactly what digital currency is going to do. Because if I, you know, if I buy too many, you know, if I fill up my tank too many times with gasoline, they could just shut down my account and say, no, too big a carbon footprint. You got to go. What if I donate to a political candidate that they don't like? Bye-bye. And it will go like that on and on and on. This is so far beyond anything that Karl Marx could have ever thought of. You know, this is so incredibly scary to me. Digital currency has to be opposed. I don't care what you thought up until this moment. Do your homework. Find out what it's going to mean. Because in the short term, it sounds great. It's very seductive, just like the debit card was. Oh, this is so convenient. I don't have to carry around cash. Nobody's going to rob me, right? They don't have my PIN number. They can't access my funds. Well, guess what? ATMs and cash will disappear. So you don't have to worry about being robbed anymore. But even banks are pretty much going to disappear. The big banks will survive, but all the little regional banks, the ones where a lot of us do business, credit unions and regional banks, they will cease to exist. And so will the jobs that they create for our communities. All those employees that are getting digitized out or robotized out. I mean, I remember when you would go to a bank drive-thru and there would be like two or three human beings that would deal with you. Now, if you go to a bank drive-thru, it's an ATM machine. There's no human being. You can't give somebody a deposit, or at least not in my bank. So think about that. No jobs. They control my money. Does this work for you? Because it doesn't work for me. It's going to take away what little control I have left over my life. And I suppose that people will delude themselves into thinking, well, no, now I'll actually have greater control. No, I don't care how secure it is. I don't care how private they say it's going to be. It poses risks to my autonomy. It poses risks to my freedoms. Some people may feel uncomfortable with the lack of a physical presence, central authority associated with digital currencies. Who's in charge of this? Plus, you know, digital currencies, at least the ones I know about, are very, and the potential for fraud and for theft, you could lose everything. Digital currency has the potential to either make our lives super great or diminish our control over our financial lives, depending on a lot of different factors. And I'm telling you, I think it's ominous. And if you're not up to speed on it, do your homework. Do your research. Do your best to stop it. And that doesn't make you some kind of, you know, caveman. It makes you a freedom-loving, autonomous human being. And that's all I ever wanted to be. So let me take a break. I'll be right back. Stay right where you are. And as if that wasn't enough, you know, I've been doing a deep dive into these banking crises. Because I think we are, well, first of all, I don't think they're telling us the truth. I think they're underplaying things. And I think that we have grown so used to being lied to that we don't even question, you know, some of the, what I would consider ridiculous stuff that that they're trying to tell me. Like, you know, don't worry, we'll guarantee all these depositors, as if that wasn't going to unleash the Kraken. Because if you know that you can do as many risky ventures as you want as a bank, and you're going to get bailed, your people are going to get bailed out, why wouldn't you do risky ventures? I mean, that's where the money is made, or in this case, where the money is lost. But listen, you know, I'm not a banking expert. I'm not a financial expert, but I know how to read. And I know how to discern when I'm being lied to. And there's a whole lot of lying going on. And I am convinced that part of my job, as much as I don't want to do this, really, I don't want to do this. I'd much rather be talking about, you know, Governor DeSantis's unforced error, as everybody keeps sending me. I received 5 emails today from people about his unforced error, his opinion about Ukraine, which, by the way, is actually probably the most relevant opinion for the population of this country, not for the political class. You see, the political class loves war. I don't know why, but they love war. The people don't like it that much, first and foremost, because they got to send their sons and daughters off to die in these wars. So they're not rah-rah like Lindsey Graham, who doesn't have a son or a daughter to worry about sending off to war. But most of the people who will be voting in upcoming elections do. So when Governor DeSantis joins Donald Trump in saying, like, I'm not sure about this war, actually almost every one of the Republican candidates for presidency, you know, they'll tell you that they know this war is not popular. So, you know, look, I'm going to tell you what, in the last few days, the government has, you know, really taken a very ugly turn in regards to this banking crisis and finance, because their actions, that absolutely, in my opinion, again, I said, I may not be an expert, but I do have common sense. In my opinion, it will make things worse. I don't know if it'll make things worse right away or somewhere down the line. But whenever you take emergency actions, which is what they did on Sunday, like they don't do anything on Sunday, but they took an emergency action on Sunday. And what it does is it creates a moral hazard that could wreck the entire financial sector and the whole economy over time. In short, what the government did was they guaranteed 100% of deposits in major banks amounting to, I don't know, like a $10 trillion bailout guarantee. How is that working? Does anybody in their right mind, anybody, think that's a good idea? That you would trust the same people who created this mess to fix this mess? The solution to the problem can't be found in the mind that created the problem. So we got to be thinking outside of that government insanity. And so I'm convinced that I have to do a whole lot more thinking about this. Why would they do this? Why would the White House make that statement? Because for the, you know, the days preceding that statement, from the time we found out about Silicon Valley Bank being in real trouble until Sunday when they made that statement, it was obvious that they were in, you know, absolute chaos, right? They didn't know what to do. And they did this because they didn't know what else to do. They thought that if they let the Silicon Valley Bank fail, that there would be this, you know, mimetic contagion and that all the banks were going to start failing, even though there is like absolutely no evidence that that's true. The reason that Silicon Valley Bank failed is very particular to Silicon Valley Bank. It's related to its bond portfolio. And it was literally created, the problem was created by federal regulators who were pushing government bonds over, you know, all the other financial instruments that created all the trouble we had in 2008, the mortgage-backed securities and, you know, the bad loans, all that stuff. They didn't want that to happen again, right? So they said, well, you know what? A safe way to go is to invest in a lot of bonds. Well, that sounded good in 2008, but that didn't sound so good this week. The bank should have been allowed to fail. That's all I'm going to say. Silicon Valley Bank should have been allowed to fail. Depositors probably eventually would have gotten 50, 60, 70 cents on a dollar. Okay. That's what happens when you keep your money in uninsured accounts. That too bad for Harry and Meghan, you know, but that's how it is. I think a little tough love here would go a long way and would be a very nice for those of us who work so hard to see. Today would be very different as all these risk management teams started looking a lot more closely at their holdings. And depositors became much more attentive to balancing out their accounts. I've been here before. You've been here before. There are very, very close analogies between the way they responded to this banking crisis. You know, never let a crisis go to waste, as Rahm Emanuel always likes to say, right? And the insane response to COVID. The presumption behind the COVID response was that the government had to minimize or even eliminate infections, which was ridiculous. That was a bogus idea from the onset. And attempting to implement that, to minimize infections of a highly contagious virus, was, it wrecked the country. It actually wrecked the world, when you think about it. We shut down schools. We shut down businesses. We shut down the economy almost in its entirety. And it was all done under that, you know, that banner of it's an emergency. We got to do something. It's an emergency. It's a crisis. Just go back 3 years ago this weekend and you can see what happened. It was in March of 2020 that President Trump tweeted out that the coronavirus could be a lot like the flu. And so there was really nothing that the government could or should do about it. People die. That's how it goes. Government has no magical power to stop it. He stated it very clumsily. But you know what? Turns out he was right. But then over the next 3 days in March, by March 12th, he imposed a travel blockade from Europe, from the UK and Australia. 3 days later, he did a lockdown edict for the whole country. And a lot of other countries followed us. So what happened? The question is, what happened to change his mind? And all the evidence points to the people who were whispering to him that this was not a normal virus. It was a bioweapon from a lab. In that case, all the germ games that national security had played over the previous year, they had to implement them. And all it took was for President Trump to agree. Consider that he was being screamed at by all the industries and the sectors that would benefit from lockdown. You know, the tech companies, the media, the big box stores, the online retailers. I mean, Walmart didn't close. Pharmaceutical companies were like in their heyday, in their glory. And a whole bunch of politicians saw this as a big windfall for them. What was missing from this crowd of Chicken Little saying the sky was falling was one scientist who could point out that a bioweapon virus from a lab still has to operate in its impact on the population like a textbook virus, even if that were true. And it may very well be true. You know, they won't let us find out the origins. What they did was fast-track the vaccine, a vaccine that was not needed, even if it worked for 90% of the population. And incredibly, it became its own form of a bioweapon once we forced it on everybody. We have health deprecation. I don't know a single person who doesn't feel their health has been damaged by the vaccine. I mean, what does that tell you? And they didn't. We weren't allowed to talk about it. We should have focused on the therapeutics necessary so that when people got sick, we could get them well. Whether that was ivermectin or whether it was, remdesivir, whether it was antibiotics, I don't know. But we certainly should have spent more time worrying about alleviating the effects of the virus than in trying to eradicate a virus by fast-tracking a vaccine. And nobody cared. The CDC, the NIH, they didn't give a fig for that concern, which of course left doctors empty-handed. Once they got sick patients, right? And then it was a group of outspoken normal doctors that figured out that there were probably some other drugs, repurposed drugs that could work, like ivermectin. Government, in the meantime, was busy ventilating everybody. It was the emergency that caused people to lose their heads and to forget everything they ever knew about viruses and disease mitigation. Instead, they deployed this wild and wacky experiment in universal human control as if we were all lab rats in their science project. It was nothing short of a disaster for public health, for our economy, for our culture, and for the law. For the law. And that's what happened this weekend concerning the Silicon Valley Bank. Instead of treating this for what it was, the failure of a poorly run business, the White House panicked and tossed the trash, you know, tossed everything they ever knew about economies into the garbage can. Common sense, garbage can. You don't bail out institutions that make terrible errors unless you created the very conditions. But did they care? No. And why? Because it was an emergency, because it was a crisis. And we're witnessing yet another failure of the administrative state. It's not necessarily Joe Biden. It's not necessarily Donald Trump. It's the administrative state. In this crisis, in the same thing that happened in the last crisis. These are people with too much power, no accountability, and no knowledge or wisdom. And they're the ones who are running the show. And it appears that every time they do something to fix a problem, they make the problem worse. The cure always seems to be worse than the disease. There's one major and dramatic reform that's been needed in this country for a long time, and probably in all countries. The administrative apparatus of the state needs to be completely disabled and gutted. And it needs to happen now. And you ought to apply that to disease, to energy, to banking, to money, and everything else. Because if this doesn't happen, then you better be pretty pessimistic about freedom. I don't think we'll have it. Don't forget, coming up at 1 o'clock, Dan Bongino. At 4 o'clock, Ben Shapiro. Then at 6 o'clock, the WPTV News. And the morning crew will be back early in the morning. I have one segment left, so stay right where you are. So I'm really grateful that you stuck with me, even though I sound like Elmer Fudd. But the content is what matters. I remember a long time ago, when I first got into radio in South Florida, there were a couple of consultants. You know, there are always consultants who want to tell you how to do your job better, even though if they could do your job better, they would be on the air doing your job, and they're not. So I had a consultant say to me, "You have a terrible voice. You're too nasal. You have a scratchy throat because you're a cigarette smoker. So here's our recommendations. And they gave me all these recommendations. And included in the recommendations was that every time you go into a break, you have to give the time and you have to talk about the weather. I don't know. They gave me all these like FM disc jockey tips. And so like I, of course, ignored all of that. And they predicted, I'll never forget, they predicted in my review that I wouldn't last. And then my, thank goodness, the program director at the time was a radio personality who knew radio, really knew radio. I presume he still knows radio, even though I don't know if he's doing it anymore. And he said, talk radio is about content. People listen to it because they either learn something or they're annoyed, angry at the broadcaster, or they're in agreement with the broadcaster. The broadcaster can sound like Elmer Fudd, or the broadcaster can talk like that. As long as their content is good, people will listen to the show. I remember when we first started carrying Ben Shapiro, and everybody said to me, he talks too fast, I can't understand him. And now they're all Ben Shapiro fans. Because his content was excellent. You know, I remember when Mark Levin came on the air, and everybody said, nobody's going to listen to that voice. He's like number two right now in the whole market. I think only Sean Hannity is ahead of him. All of them, you know, all of the content producers, with the exception of Rush, who had a beautiful voice, but most of them, their voice, you know, I don't like Hannity's voice. I don't like his style, but his content keeps people listening. So even though I was like Elmer Fudd today, I think some of my content was truly important, and I hope you stuck with it, because I need you to think about these things, to think about digital currency, to think about banks failing, and whether or not we should be bailing out banks. Because I got to be honest with you, I think we made a terrible error last Sunday, and I think it's going to come back to bite us. Well, it's already coming back to bite us, and I don't want to make any predictions, but as I predicted at the beginning of COVID, the long-term effects of lockdowns, of rushing vaccines, we won't know for 10 years. I don't think we'll know the long-term effects of, you know, saving venture capitalists who put tons of money in uninsured funds in banks. You know, bailing them out is not a wise move. I'm pretty sure that we will come to that conclusion somewhere down the line. I just hope it doesn't impact too much. You know, you and me, the little guy. I do want to talk about the border. Hopefully I'll be able to get to that tomorrow. I mean, you know, what's going on at the border? First of all, the Republicans go down there to have like a summit. And that's a good idea, right? You know, obviously when 1,000 people tried to storm El Paso the other day, it was a major news story. I mean, it even got on to CNN. So that proves it was a major news story, right? But we have 1,254 unchecked miles of border with Mexico. That's more than, that's just Texas, okay? That's more than any other state. And an estimated almost 2 million illegal immigrants are living in Texas right now. Fentanyl overdoses in Texas have risen by 400% in just a few years. 1,245 Texans have been murdered by illegal immigrants. This isn't an issue of a political party or a gender or an age or a religion or a race or a creed or a xenophobia or anything. This is an issue of life and death. We have to secure the border. And we have to defend Texas and the Texans. You know, so much for don't mess with Texas, right? So I want to talk about that tomorrow. I do. I'm going to get to it. And hopefully I'll be able to talk with Derek about some celebrity nonsense, because it eases me out into the weekend if I don't have to be just obsessed with all of the nightmarish machinations of the politician, of the political class. That's what it is. It's a political class. I did want to also quickly remind you that the next honor flight is Saturday, April 15th. And we're talking about 3:30 on Saturday, April 15th. and the staging will be at 3:15. They'll load the bus. Anyway, it's all available. I'm going to get all the information out and put it on the website. The other thing I had to tell you was Forgotten Soldiers Outreach, which is one of my favorite groups down here. Linnell needs help. They're desperate for We Care package items for their monthly We Care packages. They have almost 2,000 registered recipients, and they're extremely low on care package items. They barely have enough items to complete the March shipping. So if you can help, please help. They have an Amazon wish list. You can just type in Forgotten Soldiers Outreach, and it'll tell you what they need. Or you can, you know, visit their website, or just find out. It's forgottensoldiers.org. And do the right thing. You know, if we don't do it, can't wait for the government to do it. They're too busy bailing out, you know, the ITECs. Thank you for your time this time. Until next time, my plan is to be back here tomorrow at noon, if it be his will and he delays his coming. What lies behind us and what lies ahead of us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. So wherever you are, just be yourself. Everybody else is taken. May God bless you, and may the mangoes and Malaluca stop blooming so I could speak. See you tomorrow.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast has been brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit CodeRedRoofers.com.